You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Make sure to throw me a follow on Twitter at @Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host, Chris Thornton. You can find him at @MistoCristofo. Chris, as always, say what's up to the people.
Hello, folks. The season's almost over, and the Jags' best season, the off season, is almost upon us.
Can we be the, like, six-time off-season champion in a row? That is yet to be seen.
We lost the off-season last week because we extended Blake Bortles, so sorry.
Yeah, but Ronnie Harrison. Yeah, you got to talk about the third-round picks. That's Dave Caldwell's saving point.
Who's now on IR.
And Dave Caldwell ain't going to be here anymore. But anyway, we're here to not talk about the offseason. We probably will anyway, but not here to talk about it primarily because we're here to break down this Jaguars-Dolphins game coming up for week 16 of the NFL season. And with that, we are joined by the host of Locked On Dolphins, Travis Wingfield, who's been down in Miami the past couple weeks credentialed to cover this Miami Dolphins team. He's gotten inside the locker room, all that fun stuff. It's been a lot of fun to cover, to follow the work that you've been doing down there, Travis. So welcome to the show. We appreciate having you on. How's that experience been for you?
Oh, it was so much fun, dude. It was a life-changing experience, something I never thought I'd really get a chance to do, but here we are at this awesome network doing, you know, big-time things. And real quick, I got to tell you guys, you're infringing on our turf as far as off-season champions, because that was the Dolphins moniker for a long, long time. I think you guys might have taken it from us.
You know what? I'm sorry. I haven't looked over the copyright stuff. If you guys need to sue me, so be it. I know people would take, like, the gifts or whatever of Donald Trump holding up the executive orders, and they photoshopped a picture of Jaguars back-to-back off-season champions. That one's like my favorite gift that I've ever seen. But anyway, we'll go ahead and zone in on this upcoming game, talk about, you know, the Miami Dolphins offense. It seems like it's been so hit or miss. Like, there's so many different weeks where it's like, okay, Ryan Tannehill, he looks good. He looks like he's recovered. He looks like the guy that we wanted to be. And then there's weeks where it's like, so Travis, in your opinion, who is the real Ryan Tannehill at this point? Is there a future in Miami, or will it be time to start potentially looking at options and Miami being the sleeper to try and grab a QB this upcoming year?
Yeah, he's definitely the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde of the quarterback position, and it basically just goes whether or not he's home or on the road. At home, he's actually a pretty damn good quarterback. On the road, he doesn't get anything accomplished. So, you know, the game on Sunday is at Hard Rock, so you'll probably see the better version of Ryan Tannehill. As far as what he is for the future, I've been told that the Dolphins are starting to kind of try to separate themselves from Ryan Tannehill, but he had a good, strong showing the last few weeks until the game in Minnesota. But I think that, again, you know, failing on the road once again, failing to get this team elevated up to a playoff level, I think the team might try to move on, but it could be one of those situations where if they can't find better, then they'll just stay with Ryan Tannehill. But I do think that they love Justin Herbert out of Oregon and Kyler Murray, if he decides to play football, two guys I've heard the Dolphins love a lot coming up in this draft.
Unfortunately, now, that both of them won't even go into the draft.
We'll see. Exactly. That'd be really interesting, because I had heard whispers last year around draft time that if what I had heard was that there were some quarterbacks that they had interest in, none of them made it to them at the adequate spot, and that's why they ended up going with Minka, or they were thinking like the best available defender at that point. But I don't think it'd shock me either if they were seriously considering it last year, and now if there are rumbles that they do like guys. But do you think that they'd be able to pull off some big trade up to the top if they need to do that for their quarterback, or do you think that they will try and be a little more conservative with it because they know they have a Jekyll and Hyde type of quarterback who can flash brilliance at times in Tannehill?
It's tricky because, you know, I think they've been a team that has tried to trade up and down the last couple of years, and for whatever reason, it just doesn't work out. Plus, you also have this potentially lame duck status of a head coach in Adam Gase, who we all thought was, you know, the Kyle Shanahan, the Sean McVay, the on and on and on, the hot offensive coordinator name. And he kind of fell by the wayside after that first year, and he hasn't gotten production out of his quarterbacks really at all outside of Ryan Tannehill. And even out of Ryan Tannehill, he's been, like I said, a home and away split kind of guy. So I think that the urgency to go up for a quarterback kind of depends on what they do in the front office this offseason, because if it's Mike Tannenbaum and Chris Greer and Adam Gase, they probably don't want to mortgage the future because they have to win right away. But if there is a house cleaning, I can see them being very aggressive and going up and getting whichever guy decides to declare or whichever guy they decide to put their target on.
Now, kind of switching gears to somebody who's had great longevity in this league. Frank Gore, he is out for this game. But we got to see some flashes from a guy that I believe we're all fans of, Kalen Ballage. Give me a little bit of what you saw on Ballage last week and how he could have possibly affect this game this week.
Yeah, so he started off basically only as a wildcat trigger man for like 3 or 4 snaps a game. He would get some looks that way. But last Sunday when Frank Gore went out, they actually expanded his workload to some outside and split zone runs. So he got a little bit more involved. He busted a 75-yarder for a touchdown, which was really just well blocked. And then his speed and vision got him the rest of those yards. But I thought he looked good. He's really powerful. He definitely gets the yards that are there for him. He's shifty. He's you know, for a guy that is his size, he's shiftier than you would expect. So I'm looking forward to seeing him get some more work. I think he'll probably actually out rep Kenyon Drake, because Drake is really banged up right now, and I've been banging this drum all season long that Kenyon Drake is criminally underused. But I think that continues on Sunday as Kalen Ballage kind of starts to get some run here down the stretch of the season.
Now, in a sense, you could say that they have some form of like three-headed monster there at running back. Granted, it's not the healthiest right now, but with Gore, with Drake, with Ballage, but how are things looking up front when it comes to opening holes for these running backs as well as the pass protection?
It's been a problem on the interior for as long as I've been alive, really, as far as this Dolphins offensive line. I mean, the guard position is just cursed, and I'm starting to think it has more to do with, you know, poor teaching, because these guys can't pick up a stunt to save their life. Any type of game up front just wrecks the offensive plan. And as far as creating lanes, I mean, that was a problem going back to Jay Ajayi, to Kenyon Drake last year, and now this year with other guys. They just can't open lanes in the running game. When they do, it's usually by design and just really good wrinkles off of other packages and looks. So it's more about the running game coordination than it is the actual skill set of the offensive line. But the Dolphins' two tackles, Laremy Tunsil and Juwan James, are both very good. Laremy Tunsil, for my money, he got snubbed in the Pro Bowl, but for my money, he's one of the top 3 left tackles in the NFL right now.
Now, when I look at the passing direction stats on PFF for Ryan Tannehill, it looks like, I mean, he can make a lot of things happen. He's relatively accurate from the line of scrimmage to the line to gain about 10 yards, and also likes the deep middle of the field. But where do you think is his more comfortable area? Because that could be a huge difference maker in a matchup where the Jaguars love to play off man and cover 3. Teams are normally really great at just attacking the short field, you know, that 0 to 10 yard range, the short to intermediate routes, whereas the Jaguars can take away the deep stuff.
They'll do a lot of that on Sunday with the backs and getting the receivers involved in some flat routes, some swing routes, and that kind of stuff, because that's kind of Adam Gase's bread and butter. And then they try to build and shot plays from there. But you mentioned some of the deep shots. It just hasn't been there this year for whatever reason. I think Tannehill's shoulder still isn't quite all the way right, because he used to be able to reach back and throw that 99-mile-an-hour fastball. That's kind of what made his career, you know, whatever you want to call his career. The fastball and the big, you know, physical talents was what made him who he is. It was the mental shortcomings that have always held him back. And this year, they don't really have that seam-busting presence, which has always been one of his best throws, that kind of seam skinny post route, you know, down the hash marks of the tight end. And Mike Gesicki has been an abject failure, and the rest of the tight end group just isn't there either. So he's been kind of held back in that regard. But they'll definitely pick away at the short underneath stuff.
Yeah, you kind of answered my question right there. I was going to ask, how has Mike Gesicki been this year? Because I know in the draft process, Zach and I both liked him. We both went to Penn State to watch him. But we knew he wasn't much of a blocker, and it seems like, have they been using him as a blocker in Miami? Like, he started there, or are they trying to use him as a catching tight end, or are they just not using him right now?
They're not using him in the right way. He's getting like 20 to 25 snaps, and far be it for me to sit here and say like I know more than the Dolphins offensive coaches, but he's like lining up in line and just getting destroyed in the running game, like getting tossed aside like you would expect he did at Penn State. And then they flex him out wide as like a boundary X, and they try to throw him fade routes, which is just incredibly telegraphed. It's so obvious when it's coming, and they haven't really worked him as like a slot receiver going up that seam, which I thought would be his really ideal position. So, I mean, I put a video on Twitter today. You guys can go ahead and check it out and get a laugh. There's a play where he gets off the snap like 2 seconds after everybody else, and then he gets into the second level and falls over his feet, which is something he's been doing all year long. Like, he cannot stay on his feet. So I don't know what his deal is, but he looks just absolutely lost right now.
Now, who would you consider to be the Dolphins' best receiving weapon? Because they've got a mix of guys that have decent catch rates, and the Danny Amendolas to Kenyon Drake, like you mentioned, how they use their running backs. Kenny Stills. I remember there was buzz about Devontae Parker because people thought he was going to get traded near the deadline. Then, naturally, right before the deadline, he just breaks out and has some awesome game. But, like, who would you say has been probably the most consistent guy and the guy that's also, you know, most likely to break off for some big play?
It'll be Kenny Stills, and he had his production dip when Brock Osweiler was in the game because Brock just could not get the ball down the field whatsoever. So he had like 5 catches over a 6-week span there, which was really weird for Kenny. He's been a big producer for the Dolphins for a few years now. The best one's on the injured reserve, Albert Wilson. I think the next best one might be Jakeem Grant. He's also on the injured reserve. So the skill positions have really been decimated. In my opinion, Kenyon Drake could be like an Alvin Kamara type in terms of the passing game. He's so gifted in that area. They just don't use him enough. But I'll say Kenny Stills as far as a deep threat and a guy that can consistently beat one-on-one coverage.
And I think that should just about sum up everything on the offensive side that we want to know from the Dolphins, unless Chris has got anything else for me.
Yeah, no, I think we touched base up for the offense at least.
Then when we come back from this short break, we're going to switch it over, talk about the Dolphins defense and a little bit more on the future of their team.
Bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs this weekend and all season long at DraftKings, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. How huge? We're talking over $1.5 million in total prizes. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. Draft a new team every week and no season-long commitment. At DraftKings, you are the GM. Just choose your players, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play. Because nothing makes Football Sunday more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup on the line. You can play free with your first deposit to complete for your share over $1.5 million in total prizes. Go to DraftKings.com or download the app today. Use promo code LOCKEDON to enter a contest for free this weekend with your first deposit and compete for your share over $1.5 million in total prizes. That's code LOCKEDON, only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
So, Cameron Wake, I mean, he's got to be, you know, the ageless wonder. They've got him. They've got Robert Quinn. They've got a defense that's putting together some pressure, and that's Cody Kessler's, like, absolute worst enemy and nightmare, all that good stuff. So, what kind of game are you expecting out of them against, dare I say it, like, the local high school offensive line?
That's great. That's too good. Cam Wake and Robert Quinn are kind of similarly built in terms of what they do best, that speed rush where they kind of bend the arc and dip underneath, you know, the offensive tackle on the left or right side, respectively. And so what that kind of does for them is it gets a pressure, like a hurry, but it doesn't really have an impact because they both kind of do these flybys, and then the quarterback can step up where the Dolphins really don't get any interior pressure whatsoever. So I think the formula just wasn't good playing on the Dolphins' part, because both those guys individually are good players and definitely have a role on this team, but together it's kind of a mess. And Cam Wake, you know, for my money, has been one of the best pass rushers over the last 10 years. He's just been awesome every single year. He always has high pressure rates, and that has continued this year. But Robert Quinn's been kind of a disappointment in that regard.
Now, before Chris goes, I do just want to check in on another pass rusher you guys have there, and that's Andre Branch, only because the Jaguars legend, who we called him Windmill here, he didn't have much of an arsenal of pass rush moves, but like once a year he'd have like a strip sack fumble return for a touchdown that made everyone love him. So how's he been since he's made it to Miami, as well as the first round pick from last year, Charles Harris?
Oh, man. We got to talk about those guys? Okay. So Andre Branch got $27 million over 3 years because of like a 3-game stretch back in 2016 where he played really well. After that, he was trash. Last year, he was trash. This year, he's been more trash. And it's just, it's mind-boggling. He'll be the first guy cut when they can cut him in the league new year coming up in 2019. As far as Charles Harris, I mean, I think it's a lost cause for him at this point. He played the Patriots a couple weeks ago and had several assignments against tight ends in the running game and was like turned around and washed out altogether. So it's just, I don't think it's going to happen for him. Andre Branch has already checked out, in my opinion. So not good on either of those two players.
Now, Xavien Howard just got announced to the Pro Bowl today. but it doesn't look like he played last week. What is his injury that he's dealing with, and do you think that he plays this week? And if he does, I mean, do you think that they would work him in slowly, or do you think he'd be full go? Kind of just what's the situation on Howard right now?
Yeah, so I saw him at the facility before the Patriots game, and he was limping really, really badly. After his second INT in the Bills game the week prior, he got dinged up on the tackle and had to come off the field, came right back in and finished the game. But then he had a little, I think it was a surgical cleanup on the knee, actually, getting things cleaned up in there from the injury. So it's a knee. He did some pre-workouts on the field both this week and last week. He looked pretty good working out in Minnesota, but they pulled him off and kind of kept him out for a week. I think if they would have won that game, he'd be for sure playing. But because they lost and playoffs might be kind of lost also, I think it'll be a game time decision for him.
And flipping over, I mean, kind of a defensive utility player almost in your first round pick, Minkah Fitzpatrick. I mean, what have your takeaways been about this guy coming in his first year? I mean, he was praised as like a true elite defensive talent in this past draft. A lot of people considered him as even a potential top five guy. People were kind of shocked to see Cleveland go with Denzel Ward over him, even if I recall correctly. So how's he panned out so far? I know he's been a mix of safety, a mix of boundary, all that good stuff.
He's the man. There was a great article back in the summer over on Yahoo talking about the Dolphins, like an entire calendar year of their scouting department. If you guys haven't read it, I highly recommend it for any football fan. But they talked about how the Dolphins scouting department was just absolutely in love with Minkah Fitzpatrick. And when he fell to them at 11, it was a no-brainer for them. Easy decision, take Minkah Fitzpatrick. And he's shown them why. He's played slot corner. He's played perimeter corner. He's played safety. He's done everything on this defense. And just the way he talks and conducts himself and prepares himself, he actually picked off a screen pass on Sunday and took it to the house. He has been killing screens all year, been getting TFLs, pass breakups, and then finally his preparation leads him right into a pick six. So everything you hear about the guy, you read about the guy, it's all true. He's awesome. Couldn't be more thrilled to have him on the Dolphins.
Now, with that, Chris, I heard you just about to say something, so I'll let you get it after this. But I saw a quote the other day going around Twitter. It was from Rashad Jones pretty much saying, like, listen, I'll play what they want, but I mean, it was something along the lines of, like, I don't necessarily understand why I'm not playing at my normal position, which, if I recall reading correctly, was strong safety. But, I mean, what's that situation been? Because I feel like every now and then you'll hear an airing of a grievance from a Dolphins player of some frustration with their role. And Jones has always been somewhat of a respected player from the just my memory of watching the Dolphins over the past couple of years. So what's that situation unfolding like? And is that more of an indictment on the coaching staff, or do you think that this is – all in all, a smart move with some of the stuff they've been doing with their personnel?
It's definitely on the coaching staff, and it's something that's kind of been a Dolphins theme the last couple of years, is getting rid of our best players who were deemed malcontents. And yeah, Jarvis Landry was kind of an asshole, to be honest with you. Jay Ajayi was the same way, and they caused problems. And Rashad Jones isn't like that, but he makes a great point, because you mentioned, you know, you obviously kind of have a bit of a thought of him from afar. He's a terrific player down in the box. He defends the strong side and weak side C gaps against the run, as well as any safety in the league. And they're playing him back at single high, where he's not the most explosive sideline to sideline guy. And so he's getting exposed in coverage, and he's not coming up and making the big plays in the running game or on the short passing game. Instead, TJ McDonald, who is a much more limited player than Rashad, is getting that job because he's even worse at free safety. So they basically, the same thing as defensive ends. They have the exact same type of player playing the safety spots, and they're it's, you know, a round peg in a square hole, or I got that backwards, but whatever. square, whatever. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And so I think that he makes a great point. Kenyon Drake talked about it too in his press conference on Monday, saying, you know, it's only up to the coaches what he can do. So it sounds all sour, man. I'm not too excited about the future if they stay with the staff, but we'll see what happens.
Now, outside of Wake and Fitzpatrick, who is the X-factor defender on this Miami defense that could possibly wreck the game or maybe tip the tides in their favor against the Jaguars this week?
Rookie linebacker Jerome Baker out of Ohio State has been terrific. By far our best linebacker, by far better than Kiko Alonso, despite what the numbers tell you. He has been way more consistent. He's way more aggressive. He initiates contact instead of inviting it into him, and he'll go and blow up a couple plays in the backfield just about every single game. They'll blitz him. They'll use him in coverage. He's just been aces for the Dolphins at linebacker, something the Dolphins have really, really needed for a long time.
And I mean, unless Chris has anything else, that should pretty much wrap it up, trying to get an idea. But Travis, I'm very curious to hear what your projection for this game is, because Chris and I, much like the Jaguars, are checked out at this point.
We talked about the under being a sure thing, and I'm going to go ahead and say that that is true. It'll probably be a game in the teens, you know, the teens up to against like the tens or whatever you want to call it. I think Miami wins because they just do that at home. They find ways to win at home. Probably something like 19-13 or something like that.
That doesn't, yeah, I mean, I'm expecting the same thing. Bet the freaking under. Travis, go ahead and give us a little shout as to some of the work you do, where people could find you on Twitter, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I'm at Wingfield NFL on Twitter. I know it's a crazy name. Great name. LockedOnDolphins.com, Locked On Dolphins podcast, and just everything Dolphins, basically.
And a great member of the Locked On team, Travis, is. Travis, thanks so much for coming on the show with us tonight.
Thanks a lot, guys.
And that will just about do it here for us at Locked On Jaguars. Make sure to go ahead and subscribe wherever you can listen to podcasts. You can listen to Locked On Jaguars. Keep leaving those ratings and reviews, and we will catch up with you guys next time.